the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Sound and Resilient Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey. Here's always on the coast, Len. We're not saying anything today. It's not just for fun and entertainment, right? It's all just entertainment, jokes, howls, laughs, lulls. You know the deal. What's up?
Yeah, man. It's all tongue in cheek. We're all having a good time doing it, and nobody should take what we're talking about seriously.
Yeah, true.
Right? Like, come on. Let's be honest. We're a couple of guys in the basement. Like,
it is true. That much is true. I can't even decide. People who watch the show all the time will notice that I did take out my pink bandana today because my hair is like long and unruly, but decided not to wear it. Anyway, Len, lots to talk about. Why don't we do this? We'll do the sponsors, get that stuff out of the way, and then we'll go into some of the housekeeping. We've got a lot of housekeeping today, a little more than usual. So first, let's talk about Easy DNS, okay? Uncancelable. You know that. I got the book behind me, unassailable.
I got the shirt.
Amazing. Okay. You also got your book signed on the weekend, which we'll talk about later on. But anyway, Mark and the boys and girls over at Easy DNS, okay, they do domains, they do DNS, they do web hosting. I personally, as I'm watching things unfold with, like, you know, the number of ways that the clamps are coming down on things, I'm interested in this VPS thing because I plan on running a Bitcoin node and I don't have a BTC pay server. We don't actually for the show yet, but we might start one. Nostr relays and stuff. You can do a bunch of that on virtual private servers, which they have. And you can move your email over from Gmail, the most spied on, crawled, data harvested, overreached email server on the planet to their email server. And they got a bunch of other stuff too. They have a tool that'll help you with that. And they'll, of course, give you a hand. They also have GPG encrypted email. So you can send an email and even Easy DNS won't be able to read it, which is dope. You can also use their service just with an email, just with the domain hosting, get everything in a package, up to you. Use our code CBP Media or tell Mark that we sent you and he'll give you, I think, 50% off, something like that, something crazy on
your 50% off the initial purchase. That's exactly
great.
It. Yeah.
Fantastic. CBP and don't forget to go watch Access of Easy too. We have been doing that show now for, I think, about 8 weeks, Len. And every week there's something there that me and you are like, oh man, this is important for Bitcoin. And then sometimes I even say, we're going to talk about it on this show. And then we never do. So you have to go over to that show, actually, because if you don't, then you will not get it the same way that I did not bring it over here. So anyway, yeah, Easy DNS, great sponsor. We love Mark, and we hope you check that out. Who else we got?
It's because we run out of time on this show. That's why. But people should have time for our next sponsor, which is Bitcoin Well. And if you're looking for privacy purchases, you're in the right sphere. You could use one of their ATMs. Buy less than $1,000, and all you need is a QR code. So you can even have a printed copy of it. So you could leave your phone at home and you're good to go. You don't have to provide any more information besides from that, but you could also buy and sell your Bitcoin online. It's non-custodial, so you have to have a wallet beforehand. And the price, the spreads right now, it's very, very good. The transfer fees are cheap, and that's really good considering what's happening in the land of Bitcoin. So that's a good place to buy your Bitcoin, but also you could get gift cards for places like Home Depot, Sobeys, a whole bunch of other places. Pay your bills with Bitcoin. You gotta live in the Bitcoin standard. And they also have the Bitcoin Well Infinite program, and where you could be, if you're a big fish, you get a little bit of extra service from there. So check it out. ATM codes CBP33 only on Mondays, the day we record this show. The rest of the day is CBP10. So the Mondays you get a 5% Bitcoin bonus, and the rest of the day is 1.5% Bitcoin bonus. And if you're signing up online, use the code CBP. What that does, if you transact before the end of May, you're going to be entered into a draw to win a Block Clock Mini. So yeah, check that out. Good place to buy and sell your Bitcoin if you want to do.
Dude, I love the ATMs. I like getting the nice little discount. And of course, we've talked about the nature of the KYC on buys under $1,000. I won't bring it up here, but it's worth thinking about. You can always ask me privately, ask Len privately. We'll help you with all that. And yeah, of course, man, Bitcoin Well, I think the only place you can do that in Canada. So that's why they're with us, and that's why we're with them, and we love it. So Len, first things first, the meetup. Why don't you talk a bit about what Saturday was like?
It was a good event. We had I'll say about 50 people attend. 25 came from our side. And a big thanks for providing the other 25 and the venue, Tom and Nick. They're from Rockstar Real Estate. And also they're from the Your Life, Your Terms podcast. So check out that podcast if you are not already subscribing to them. And it was a great event. We had Foss there. Give some thanks to a lot of people. HODLD for giving that coin presentation. Bitcoin all caps for setting up the node and doing it on its side, showing people how to do it. Plus, he provided me with an open dime. So thank you very much. The Corn Lords, it was good to meet you all once again. Foss was on fire. Mark from Easy DNS was there. Met him for the first time. Jesse Berger provided me with a signed copy of the book. Not for free. I paid for it. So this wasn't just a freebie. And it was good. It was good. Good day all around. We got to meet a whole bunch of people and talk to a whole bunch of like-minded Bitcoiners.
I'm just typing in the chat here. Sorry, that Boomer's asking how many accelerators were in the crowd. Well, I don't know. How many is everybody? Pretty much everybody I talked to was talking to me about this and enjoying that we're whispering it on the air. Accelerate. I still don't know if I really understand the principles of this. Jared is coming on in about a month, I think, end of this month.
This month. And Mark.
End of this month with Mark, exactly, to give us a hand with this theory. I was saying to Len, you know, we don't often do tag team interviews, but I think I want to be on for that one. Maybe we'll do it together to match the energy on the other side of the camera. So that was awesome. Big thanks to Tom and Nick. It was good to see a lot of faces there. You mentioned Greg Foss. Mark from CoinShack was there. Jesse yes. Berger was there. Jordan Anderson, former CEO of BitBuy, was there. Spent some time with him. The, you know, irreplaceable, beyond imitatable, Bitcoin all caps in the house, of course. HODL D for his work on the CoinKite side, doing a little bit of presentation and I think selling a bit of stuff. And man, awesome. And I just want to mention too that those meetups, I would like to do another one like that, Len, with the Rockstar Real Estate guys, with Tom and Nick Carrazza, because as you know, and as you learned throughout the day, and I know same thing for me, a lot of those people, even though they don't come from Bitcoin, they think about things in much the same way that we do. They understand there's a problem with sort of societal norms shifting in a direction that might not be great for most outcomes, with money no longer holding value and with, you know, the difficulties of stuff like, you know, I talked to somebody for 15 minutes about the difficulties in like raising a family and the difficulties in you know, having kids and the battles that they're having with schools and all the other influences. These are things that I think are important, and you may agree or disagree, but as always, you know, I invite everyone to come and have those discussions with people who will treat you with respect and engage with you honestly. And that's exactly what those meetups are for. So once again, a big thanks to Tom and Nick Carrazza. Now, Len, I have a couple more things to mention here. We have a Discord chat that is nearing 100 people, I think. It's got like 70 something people in it as of today, yeah, which is great. It. Yeah. So we added yesterday night while I was doing stuff related to a house that I am trying to buy and still trying to buy. I spun up a, yeah, thanks buddy. Fingers crossed for people on the audio side. Len is throwing up the deuces there. On the Discord chat, there's going to be new subheadings for each episode, and I'll start a thread under there. And if you want to discuss something in the episode, I invite you to do it there. We're trying to get the episode to as many places as we can. It just makes sense for us. And at the same time, I spun up a Twitch channel.
Yes.
I don't know much about Twitch. We are streaming there right now, I understand. So now we're in like six places, right? Rumble, Twitch, YouTube, two Twitter accounts. Is that it? Maybe it's not quite six, but if you include Bitcoin all the Twitter TV, accounts, Bitcoin
it's,
TV.
It's not streamed onto that. I upload it after the fact, but we are also on there. And I think that covers them all.
That's yeah. So lots of places you can watch us, right? If you're interested in that kind of stuff. And if Len lets me, I might even play video games on that Twitch stream from time to time since, I don't know. I often play video games by myself. So why not just play and talk shit with a bunch of you guys? And also I saw someone yesterday, Pauly Tremonti, who's in the chat all the time. I noticed he was playing old school RuneScape. I haven't ever played old school RuneScape, but I think that might be like the longest lasting online game I think I've ever seen. So interesting. No, yeah.
There are others that are from the early 90s that are still in a
internet multiplayer, like, yes. Okay. StarCraft maybe. Command & Conquer is not getting played anymore. What else is there?
No, there are some text-based games that are still in play from the early 90s. So, and they're multiplayer dungeon type games. So, yeah, they're still around. So, yeah, it's I've seen them. I've played some of them. I've been through it all. I've been in the internet for decades. But that's a I don't know. That's a story for another time.
Paulie Joey in the chat saying he's grinding that shit right now, which is hilarious. My brother-in-law plays old school RS. I am never going to play it, but anyway, good for you, sir. I love to see it. What's up?
He's pulling the guy from FTX at SBF, just playing that while listening to us at the same time.
What are you see? Are you seeing these comments? This is like good. This is way out of left field. Okay, I don't know enough about RuneScape to talk about this specifically. But the Paulie is saying, I figured out how to run scripts. I got to level 60 wood cutting overnight. I know there's a forest somewhere in RuneScape where you go to like chop wood. I think it's like a quest or something. And then at the end, maybe you go back there to level up. I don't know. This is all stuff that brings me back to the Diablo days, running bots, trying to get loot. Anyway, sorry, Len, go ahead, please.
So let's talk about Fountain. And it's another place you can listen to us, but don't even just listen to us. Listen to all your shows on there, all your podcasts, because you're going to get stream sats for doing it. But anyways, let's get through the boostograms. Norman Remnant writes in, miners being deployed at Los Palos across the nation, criminally underrated. Again, that was a reference to Breaking Bad, I'm guessing. Was that the one? I can't remember. I didn't ever watch that show.
Yeah.
Doug and Roop writes in, gotta love the Bank of England. Have fun staying poor, you say. GFY. A lot of people are telling us the GFY
have,
for some
have
reason.
Have fun staying poor, isn't it?
Rander writes in, the story of the BC Children's Hospital is disgusting. This is exactly along the lines of C19 policy. BC is an extremely liberal province. If anyone lives there, please consider moving away for the sake of your family and your own sakes as well. So, yeah. Second Breath writes in for last episode, agreed. So he loved the whole episode, it looks like. And Norman Remnant writes in for the Lincoln mining episode I did with Medi. I'm switching from Brains to Lincoln. So I guess like we had one person at least switch over from one pool to Lincoln. So that's pretty cool. We got some influence there. I'm not telling people to move there. If they want to move there, great. I mean, Brains seems like a pretty good place to mine as well, because you get a discount if you're running Brains OS. But just my two sats.
Yeah, man. I think that's all the housekeeping. So we're about 11 minutes in, which is better than the 15 or 20 we usually get to doing this. I just want to apologize here. Actually, Jordab says it's not a problem. I can see double entries in the chats.
Yes,
every time I write something. Yeah, so but it sounds like they can't. So that's good. Yeah, definitely, guys and girls, like and whatever, subscribe.
You know what that is?
I mean,
Joey,
you're all subscribed, but like and do. Yeah, it's Twitch and YouTube, right?
Yeah. So and when somebody writes in, if it's got the purple, that's a Twitch comment.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. Anyways,
noted.
There's a lot to talk about today, Joy. A heck of a
How
lot
much?
To talk about.
A lot.
A heck of a lot. So let's lead off with what's been dominating the Bitcoin talk recently. Love that hat, by the way.
Thanks, Jordan Anderson, for this hat. I would never give Pomp any money, but I will take the hat.
So the Bitcoin network seems to be the topic of discussion. And some interesting items to note. The Bitcoin hash rate keeps climbing up. As a result, the difficulty to mine also continues to climb up as well. But another one that's very, very interesting is the transaction fees. And there's a lot of moving parts with respect to the transaction fees. And really, if you look at this, oh boy, the number go up on this one. And it's all started with the creation of ordinals, inscriptions, and now, well, BRC20 tokens. BRC20, it's a new standard, and this is experimental in nature, and allows for creating shitcoins with the ordinal protocol. And so meme coins like the Peppy coin, very popular amongst the shitcoin crowd. And a lot of people are trying to make a quick buck. A lot of people have made a quick buck. Hopefully they sold in time. And I even took a look how easy it is to do, Joey. I went to see how to make one of these. It does not take a heck of a lot of technical knowledge. You just need to.
Did you mint? Did you mint Lencoin?
No, I did not. I'm not going to do that. No way. It's something called UniWallet. And apparently UniWallet is the only wallet out there that supports BRC20 shitcoins. And the transaction of these shitcoins, this is mostly why the network fees are, the transaction fees are so bloody high. And if you look at the mempool, I'm not sure how you wanted to call it, because everybody has a mempool who runs a node. Many blocks that have been mined, you could see 500, 600, even 700 sats for BByte. That's a lot. And considering where we were a few weeks ago, 6 months ago, one sat, that's those days have gone. I don't know.
6 months ago, it was that. Two Sundays ago, I moved some Bitcoin. Yeah. It was like two sats per BByte. Yeah.
So, and also of note, Joey, did you see the transaction fees too? Some of them are exceeding the block reward in some cases. Have you seen that?
So we have Gandalf in a group chat who obviously works for Brains. I'm just going to share the mempool site here. He was saying that there was a block yesterday that the fees that Brains mined, where the fees exceeded the coin reward, the block reward, I should say. So that's a, you know, at least, was it 12 and a half, I guess, total would have to be the number or something like 6. That.
6.25 would yeah, be so, like
so,
the
so, so it has more to than that. So more than 12 and a half Bitcoin total, right? Crazy. Yeah. There's a lot to talk about there. I'll let you continue the story, but this is interesting. If you're looking at, if you're listening on audio, you can't see the mempool.space right now, but this is nuts. It's 643 sats per V-byte coming in the next 11 minutes for the next block. Absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. It's
making mining more profitable. But with respect to getting the transaction fee rewards exceeding the block rewards, it's not the first time this happened. In fact, it happened from what I gathered 35 times in the past. But the last time it happened was in Christmas or around Christmas 2017. So it's been a number of years since this last reported. The highest, in fact, Joey, it's been reported 291 Bitcoins for fees in one block. That's a lot of Bitcoin that was transacted, that was used in that one block. But anyways, these extra fees now, miners are now the beneficiary of this because they're able to earn more by building a block. And perhaps this could offset the new Biden 30% tax they're going to be putting on Bitcoin miners in the future. We'll talk about that in a little bit later in the show. Really, this is impacting more so non-custodial exchanges. Joey, your interview with Francis from Bull Bitcoin.
Yeah.
He outlined in that show that non-custodial exchanges are the most at risk here, because if you are a custodial exchange, historically people buy Bitcoin and they transact with it. They keep it, they buy, sell before they withdraw it. So they're not subjected to the transfer fees right away. But non-custodial, it's right away, because as soon as you make the purchase, you're subjected to it. So ShakePay. ShakePay actually made a change today, and they said they're going to be decreasing their batching time from 5 minutes to 10 minutes to reduce the amount of unconfirmed transactions in the mempool. Also, they're going to be, with Ethereum, they increased the minimum cash out. Fuck that. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. Binance, they too suffered some sort of problems with this. Twice in the last, today,
happened again today.
So it was within a 12-hour span that they temporarily paused Bitcoin withdrawals. That's on-chain. But to their credit, they enabled Lightning Network withdrawals on the same day. Was this due to pressure? Did they already have this in place and you're just waiting for the right time to do it? I don't know, but I'll give them credit here. Coinbase has yet to even do this. Well, now if you look at all this, are these fees going to stay here for quite some time? Probably. And the people transacting in this, these BRC20 tokens, a lot of them FOMO'd in. They see that number go up, they want in. They don't give a shit. They're going to pay whatever transaction fee required to do. Right now, it's around $20 or so, whatever the heck it is. Whatever the transaction fee when it's time to pull out, they're going to pay it as well. If they see the numbers quickly, their amount that they have in there, it's being wrecked, they'll pull out whatever fee they have to pay, they'll do it. So the transaction fees are going to remain high for quite some time because of these FOMO shitcoiners. They don't give a shit what the transaction fee is. Another thing to consider too, there's also that ordinal bug that was instituted just this past week.
The numbering bug?
It seems to be lost in the sauce. Sorry?
The numbering bug?
Yeah, so at around 3.5 million, anything beyond that, it's going to be off by one. I'm not sure how or if that's going to impact these BRC20 tokens, but this is something that it was a lot of fanfare when it was first talked about, when it was first released to the public, but I haven't seen much talk about this. But with respect to what we're seeing now, the price of the transaction fees, the growth of the network, and that would be the adoption rate. So more people adopting it, you would expect the transaction fees to increase. This is they go part of parcel, but right now, it seems like you have one segment going up the fees, but the adoption rate not really increasing. So it's kind of an external force coming in here. And it was inevitable on-chain was going to get too expensive. It was never going to remain cheap forever. But, well, here we are. And is this a bad thing? I don't know.
You tell me. We got to get into it. This is really the core of the discussion, right? is it bad that the block fees have become this high? And, you know, maybe more specifically, in your view, is it bad that it's because of inscriptions?
Well, it's operating within consensus. So it's definitely not something that's outside consensus. So we have to respect that. I don't perceive this to be any attack or any sort of attack. So it's not a nation state or anybody trying to flood a network and trying to do a denial of service type thing. I just think this is just shitcoiners coming in and coming into the party trying to make a quick buck. Really, so it's not an attack. More than anything, it's annoying. There are things that I've talked about which could be perceived to be attack, and there are things that I haven't yet publicly disclosed what could be an attack. I could tell you offline. I'll never disclose it publicly. But I see this, and it's really, more than anything, it's an annoyance. It will eventually work itself out. The amount of money that's being poured into every transaction, they'll run out. They can't continually do this. So this is something that's just annoyance today, maybe annoyance next week, but in the long run, it's going to be gone. And it's a good test run to see what's going to happen when transaction fees do go up. We need L2 to step up. Is it ready for prime time? Probably not, but this is a good trial. So in some ways, there are some positives you can take out of this. That's the way I look at it.
I think you're right. And I think that you mentioned there that makes a lot of sense to me. I've never been a proponent of this idea that the security budget long-term has holes in it. We've talked about this over the years with like Mario. We might have talked about it with Francis. We may have talked about it with other people when the show was a little younger. We haven't touched on it recently because it's just hasn't been topical. But the security budget for Bitcoin, you know, the naysayers will say that as the block subsidy drops to zero or gets closer and closer to zero every halving, the miners won't stay online because they won't be able to sustain their operation just through the block reward. They'll need fees too. And the way that you get fees is to get usage. And if the velocity of Bitcoin is not that high because the block size is low or because it's a store value that's, you know, super superior or whatever, then you have problems with that. I personally disagree. If we become global money, then, you know, that's the end of the story. It's not going to matter how small that block reward gets. As the network grows in security, it grows in value, and global money is truly like an insane threshold for Bitcoin as far as value on the network. And so I personally have no problem with keeping, you know, as C-Funk is saying, keeping tail emissions at zero. I don't want to see continued emissions like Monero has, like Ethereum seems to have, and others as well, to, you know, keep inflating the supply. Not interested in that. The thing that I am interested in seeing here, and the thing that I think is good, is that we're seeing what high fee stress looks like in an environment where it's not that important to have low fees. We had something similar in 2017. I didn't go back and look at this, but I remember sending Bitcoin to like my brother, my dad, a few other people when I started looking at it in 2017 and trying to get people on board. And it was expensive. It was like 20, 30 bucks to send off Coinbase to another Coinbase wallet, by the way. So they weren't even doing like internal transfers at that point, I don't believe. Yeah, it was very expensive. I remember my brother signing up. Or maybe it was for ShakePay, I forget, but one of those companies. And it was very expensive back then. And so I don't think that there's actually a reason to be concerned about this for the moment. I think these people who are minting these coins, they don't have infinite cash. Like there's not any scenario where I just see this stuff continuing, right? These 16 cent transactions that pay $30 in transaction fees just to put something on the blockchain. I don't predict it, you know, I don't predict that it will continue in perpetuity. There's been a lot of stuff to come out of this though, Len, that's making me not cautious, but it's annoying to see this stuff over and over and over and over again. And it's stuff about block size, for example, right? Like Bitcoin needs to raise the block size because that will lower fees. You know, if we raise the block size, the block size is like a highway, right? It's like a 400 series highway. If you just keep adding lanes, cars will fill the lanes no matter how many lanes you add. And so the solution is really find a way to take cars off the road if you want to reduce traffic, not just keep adding lanes. Trust me on that. Okay. That's going to be the same thing in Bitcoin. People will throw who knows what videos or, you know, pictures of you and me tap dancing that they made in ChatGPT and the, like, you know, all that stuff will be on there and they'll fill the block space one way or another. I see people talking about, you know, fake layer two stacks. Obviously, Muneeb is out there again. Like, I haven't heard from that guy in a year, and now he's out there talking about stacks as layer two. It's not a layer two. That guy's a fucking con man. And you shouldn't be looking at these things. If you want to do layer twos, Lightning is the layer two to look at. Now, when it comes to Lightning, you know, you made a good point, and you're the Lightning savant here on the call, on the show. I don't think it has prime time elements as far as like retail adoption. It's very difficult to use, whether it's channel balancing or just the general UI, the riskiness of all this stuff. And my understanding too is that the sudden spike in fees has basically halted some use of the Lightning Network, right? Because you can't close channels. So maybe we can talk about that later. You can give me the details on that. But all that to say that it's not really ready. Then I hear people like Nick Carter, who I've supported publicly many times on this program, talking about how staking is the smartest thing that Ethereum did, because that way you get a look at some of the wealth being created by miners during times like this. I mean, that's a dumb take. It's like stonehead take. And the thing is that if you want exposure to, you know, wealth being created by miners, buy the ETF. Doesn't Valkyrie have a mining ETF? Leah Wald and team over there put a mining ETF together. I think there's been others in the news over the last 6 months. Or you can just buy like Hut 8 or Marathon or Core Scientific bankrupt or whoever, right? Like, you buy whatever you want if you want exposure to mining revenues. You don't need staking. Staking is not an option. It cannot be an option because it just creates the same problems that we have in the fiat system. I don't know. I say, Len, that we stay the course here. One of the things that makes Bitcoin so strong and so desirable as a network and as an asset is that every time something on the fringes of what's acceptable happens, we don't panic and move the Overton window. We stay the course. And the people who try to move the Overton window and spend a lot of time working on this stuff, they eventually leave and go to other tokens, go to other networks. They start their own shit coins. They start stacks or whatever else. And Bitcoin resumes, you know, TikTok next block operations the way that it always has. So I think that we stay the course here, and we get an opportunity to look at what L2 adoption could look like. One other thing I want to add, I tweeted this morning. The exchanges that rely on network fee payments or subsidies for people removing coins from their exchange when they send to private wallets. ShakePay, former sponsor of the show. We'd like ShakePay. I don't have a problem with ShakePay personally. Other ones too, Newton, Kraken, Swan, I believe. Bull, I don't think, pays fees, although they do some batching, which maybe minimizes the cost. And even Bitcoin Well, who did not raise their fees today at the ATMs, even though the cost per transaction was like through the roof. That's a problem. Those moats are going to evaporate over time, because it sounds like me and you agree on at least that the longer this thing goes, the Bitcoin, you know, asset and network operate, the more likely that this high fee, you know, structurally high fee environment starts to become entrenched. I don't think there's another way for this to happen. It's either going to happen through adoption or through cost per token, per Bitcoin, right? So these companies that are paying a lot of fees for people, it's not a sustainable business model. I'd be curious to see what some of these guys come up with. You mentioned there, obviously, that ShakePay is working on some stuff with their Ethereum and Bitcoin withdrawals. Celia from CoinKite in the chat is saying you can pay in Lightning soon on the CoinKite website, which is great. Binance, obviously, implementing Lightning, like you mentioned, and there'll be more to come, because as is always the case in Bitcoin, the incentives dictate the outcomes. And you know, sometimes that's good for your friends. Sometimes it's good for your enemies, as we like to say.
We embrace them all. Let's move on, because there's still a heck of a lot more to talk about. And Team Biden, they're trying to push through a 30% tax on Bitcoin miners. And this is a so-called climate change tax. That's what it's billed to be. The actual name is called the Digital Asset Mining Energy Exercise Tax. And this is going to be a phased in approach, and during this, and once it's fully phased in, firms or Bitcoin miners are going to be faced with a tax equal to 30% of the cost of energy they use in Bitcoin mining. This, to me, is just a way to get money to try to pad their pocketbooks, which is depleted. They need as much money as possible. It's also pandering to people saying that Bitcoin uses too much energy, and the energy that it uses is contributing to climate change, in reality, there's a lot of stranded energy that it's doing, and it may be doing good for the environment. If you believe methane is bad for the environment, well, a lot of these Bitcoin mining operations, they're capturing that and combusting it. So instead of having methane go up into the air, or at least a little bit of methane when you flare it, it's going to be totally CO2 or CO, depending on how you, it's a combustion process. But either way, it's better for the environment in that. So this will ultimately push away Bitcoin mining operations because it's less likely to do business here because it's more costly to do it. They'll find other jurisdictions which are more favorable to do this type of business, and potentially even quote unquote poorer countries will be adopting these Bitcoin mining. We'll look at Bhutan. We'll talk about them later on. But in this whole vein here, the fact that the federal government wants to impose this 30% Bitcoin tax, there's one bright spot to this. The U.S. state of Montana, they have passed a law that's going to stop all taxes on Bitcoin when used as payments. I know this doesn't impact mining per se, but right now there's capital gains in which you have to declare when you spend your Bitcoin. But Montana is exempt from that. I'm not sure if there's a federal tax you have to pay too, but for whatever reason, Montana seems to be a place that is wanting to accept Bitcoin in one way or another. So it's good to see that there is opposing views. The federal government wants to go one way, and some states want to go a different way. This is going to be interesting how it plays out, especially considering we have an election next year. This could be an election topic.
The battle between state and federal power continues to amplify, whether it's Florida, DeSantis, going up against Biden through COVID measures, through economic measures, CBDCs, or something like Bitcoin mining. Again, the U.S. is operating in sort of this clown reality that's just impossible to imagine becoming true. This is the same group of people who has their Secretary of State, not their Secretary of State, their Secretary of Energy, maybe Granholm, Jennifer Granholm, talking about how the entire U.S. military fleet is going to be electric by 2030. Like, these people don't live in reality, Len, and it's not surprising to hear them misunderstand both the benefits of Bitcoin mining as they could replace peaker plants or other demand response opportunities that they present, and the nature of Bitcoin, the asset, as it potentially could support the U.S. dollar and American hegemony going forward. It's clear that Bitcoin, like, this is the thing I always think about this, right? Preston Byrne was on this show probably around this time last year, honestly. And, he said the same thing that you and me say all the time, and he said it in pretty plain language. Bitcoin's not going away. The question is, who's going to be the country that embraces it and finds a way to make it work for them, and who are going to be the countries that refuse to see the light and keep their people in the dark, much the same way that, Soviet Russia did, right? Famously, Soviet Russia had a media machine that told people that America had nothing on the shelves at grocery stores and people were living in squalor and whatnot. And then when Russian leaders started to come over to the United States and they saw just overflowing shelves and whatnot, it was a mind-bending experience. Like, this is not what I was told. And I think we're getting to that point in America, Canada, other places when it comes to Bitcoin. I'm sure we'll talk about the Bank of Canada and their CBDC push maybe today or next week. I'm not sure when, but... Or maybe we won't. As soon as I said that, Len went to his keyword, probably going to the private chat to tell me we're not talking about it. But anyway.
No, we're talking about it. Absolutely. I'm just moving stuff around.
Okay. So the mining thing, man, like we talked about last week, and we've talked about this many times, Pierre Richard on the show a little while ago saying the same stuff. It's not about Bitcoin mining. It's about them wanting to control what you get to use your energy for. Lest we forget, okay, the number of media stenographers who said that no one was ever going to ban gas stoves. What happened in New York last week? They want to ban gas stoves.
Like, we'll talk about that, Joey.
Like, it's always the same thing. Everyone's got to have their hand in what I'm doing, who I'm sleeping with, what I'm teaching my kids, what I'm driving, what I'm spending, what I'm saving. It's all there. But this is the same country where you can get surgery to grow your legs a few inches. They will literally break your fucking legs and stretch them for you in an American hospital if you got the coin, but you can't run a gas stove or an S9. This is crazy, man. It's crazy. And, one thing I agree with about the accelerate crowd is that the more this starts happening and the more this snowball starts to roll downhill, the more people are going to realize how big this fucking snowball is. And as that continues to develop and as it continues to become visible for even the most strident normies, you're going to see a lot of people start heading into Bitcoin. I really look forward to it. Though, again, it's going to be rocky on the way, man. Brandon and the boys over there, they ain't going to make it easy. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and let's move on, because this is a story that they may not make it easy for this country's election, which is El Salvador. We won't talk much about the election, but they did sign the president announced that there's a new law that's been enacted, and it's the Innovation and Technology Manufacturing Incentives Act. This, in effect, eliminates all taxes, income, property, capital gains, and import tariffs on technology innovation, software, and app programming, AI, computer, and communications hardware manufacturing. So it's a whole list of things that it's going to try to attract a whole bunch of businesses. I reached out to a friend of the show, Jaime Garcia, because this obviously is beyond me. And he's the guy I trust. He's got the connections over there. So not really boots on the ground physically, but remotely he does. So I was able to talk to him to get his feedback on this. And he was saying this law is designed to create an innovation economy. So really cool stuff. And it's also going to be lay the foundations for the Bitcoin city. We haven't talked much about the Bitcoin city, so I'm curious to see how things are going to progress with that. And they're going to try to build some sort of tech-based economy that will be sustainable. Because if you look at their economy right now, their exports, I see coffee, maquilas, processed fish. That's really the top list of that's driving their economy. So if they could bring in something else, like that would attract tourism and investment, it could give them a new lease on life with the economy, and could give them longer legs. And they're just not stuck with those items I mentioned earlier. And it could also bring in new investors, not just Bitcoiners. So more money, more opportunity. The tech sector, it's obviously capital intensive, but if you could bring some in, it could really elevate the country, not just the country itself, but the standing as well, the country standing. And they've spent so much money and time and effort on dealing with the security of the country. And they've improved the security to the point where it may be possible to attract these businesses, and security may not be one of the top things that people want to deal with. So another thing Jaime mentioned, is that they've even reformed the educational system. This is really cool. All kids in public schools from kindergarten to grade 4 receive a tablet, and those from grades 5 to grade 12 receive a laptop. They're preparing them for to change the economy to be more tech-based. I like that. But a lot of this is going to stem on Bukele's re-election. Now, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole here because it's really interesting, but there's a lot of moving parts here. It's not a slam dunk. He will be running again, because there is a constitutional hurdle ahead. He has to get approval from the assembly. So there's a lot of hurdles he has to jump through in order to be reelected. In fact, he has to step down for a period of 6 months, at least 6 months beforehand. So there's going to be a vacuum there where he's not going to be in charge. That's all side. More so to do with this bill. I like it. Bukele has been, at least from my eyes, if I'm looking at this from the outside, I don't have skin in the game. He's been good for the country, and he's been a solid Bitcoiner. He could, at any stage of the game, brought in a shitcoin, Sango, Miami Coin, whatever the fuck. He has not. He's been continually looking at the end goal, Bitcoin. In fact, he's been buying one a day. At least he's announced that back in November last year when the price tanked. I'm not sure if they're still doing that. But that's balls, man. To do that, that's balls. He's turning his back on the existing fiat system that is very much, it's American-centric, but that could also be his downfall too, depending on how much meddling they have in the election moving forward. Who knows what happens? But really cool stuff.
My brother, I couldn't have said anything, I couldn't have said that better myself. Jaime's in the chat here. So shout out to you, Jaime, for providing, as always, the El Salvadorian correspondent of the CBP, doing the Lord's work over there in the, I think he's in the middle of the country. So yeah, we appreciate that, man. I know, like, when I hang out with my parents, usually we're like watching basketball, or my old man's giving me shit about something. I remember you told us one time that you guys like to read El Salvadorian law and legal updates on the weekend. So shout out to you, man. We need people like you. Len, I got a little bit of pie on my face here, because is it pie on your face or egg on your face? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Egg, I would say that would be.
Egg on your face. I got a little bit of egg on my face because I was talking a lot of trash about the bond issuance from El Salvador. I was talking a lot of trash about the adoption of Bitcoin over there. We've spoken, I think, fairly about the Chivo wallet, which, you know, naturally means we've had some concerns with the way it was rolled out and the concerns with the way it operates and maybe, you know, will operate in the future. But I think at the end of the day, I have to admit, and I think even the most anti-Bitcoin, anti-El Salvador fiat maximalist, you know, places like The Economist and The New York Times and Forbes, who wrote about this guy, they have to admit he's been good for the country. Whether you like Bitcoin or not, much to your point, the country is safer. It's more prosperous. It attracts people. It's on the map now. This idea that he put a bunch of criminals behind bars became global news. And I think the intention for a lot of these media outlets was to villainize him as some kind of dictator. But it turns out that people crave that kind of security and that kind of safety. And if it means putting, you know, a bunch of guys with, like, you know, assault rifle tattoos under their eyes in jail in conditions that, you know, certainly you wouldn't see at the Barton Street Jail in Hamilton, but you may need in certain scenarios, then I think that it's hard to say he's been anything but a positive influence on the country. So I'm happy to support him and talk about him on the show. And, you know, the education system thing, just as an aside, how many other countries in the modern world have modernized in that regard, modernized in the way they teach or the tools they use? Certainly not here in Ontario. Certainly not here in Ontario. I don't know.
They've modernized in a different way.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Let's not go down that
path. No comment. But also, I just want to note as well that CBP also adopting a 6-month moratorium for directors. So when you step down for 6 months, you'll be doing it first. I'll be taking over and steering the ship. Look out, I might put you in jail, buddy. You never know. My political opponents, they don't survive.
All the shenanigans that we've done behind the scenes is going to be brought to light. And the Chivo wall, I just want to touch a little bit more about that. Yeah, it hasn't been a smooth transition to bringing out this whole Bitcoin adoption. So there has been some naysayers and people looking at what's going on there. But this is its first of its kind. They are paving ground here that has never been paved before. So
well, what did we talked about last week a little bit, right? You have now a state model for adoption and use and currency, like it could be included in the currency landscape. And then you have now in Bhutan, another example of a state model for mining. How do you do it? This is the way, right? And you know, those countries are going to learn from each other and other countries are going to learn from the two of them. And it's all going to be good, man. We're moving in the right direction, I think.
So let's talk about two more stories. Number one, Robert Kennedy Jr. It looks like he's been adopting at least the narrative of Bitcoin, saying that there's a misunderstanding about the energy usage of Bitcoin. He's also been anti-CBDC. He, in fact, through all this, has been invited to go to Miami to talk about this. Now, I don't know. The whole Miami conference, I'm not attending, so maybe I'm a little biased on my approach here, but I don't want to see politicians go there. The only one that really has gone there that worked out was Bukele. Everybody else that has gone there, it turned out to be a real disaster in the end, because they're just using this, at least in my opinion, a way to pump their bags, their political bags, and to help get elected. But Kennedy Jr. is not the only one that is going to be there. Apparently another candidate, a Republican presidential candidate called Vivek Ramaswamy.
Vivek.
Okay. I never heard of, they're bringing in a few of them for better, or for worse, but really, is this the place for a Bitcoin conference? In my opinion, no, but
why
I don't have much.
Opinion,
I don't have
why
stake
is it in your
game
opinion.
Here,
no, so. the only reason I ask and the only reason I have, you know, a little bit of pushback is because how many of those Bitcoin people even vote, right? Bitcoiners, as far as I can tell, barely even vote. And also, if they're going to vote, they're voting for Vivek or RFK Jr. in a primary, right? You know, generally, especially in RFK's case, you know, he's going to have to primary against Biden if he wants to have a shot. I think he's polling at about 20%. So the DNC will have a hard time keeping him off a ballot. There will have to probably be some, you know, engineering done on their part to keep him away from the stage. But I'm curious why you think it's a place where they can round up political favor. If anything, it's, you know, not a place where they could do it. It seems like it's a friendly crowd already. Why waste your time sort of thing?
Well, if they could attract people that wouldn't vote, that's going to help you out. If they're not going to vote initially, but you could somehow change their mind to come out and vote for you. I'm not sure if they would vote in primaries, but it's pumping your bags. I want to see stuff about Bitcoin adoption, Bitcoin innovation, Bitcoin mining, shit like that. I don't want to see politicians step on stage and talk about it. Like, really? Like, that could be done on a different stage, not at the Bitcoin conference. But again, I don't have stake in the game, so I could be wrong in my approach here. But let's move on.
There's a guy spamming in the chat. I don't know how to block it. Maybe you can do it.
I'll take care of that. Yeah.
We'll do it. Okay. So,
the last story I have is about Bhutan. And once again, they made our list of stories to talk about. Well, there's a Bitcoin mining company called Bitdeer, traded under the ticker BTDR. And they are going to work with the Bhutan government to set up Bitcoin miners in their country. And we talked about the government's commercial arm, the Druk Holdings and Investments. Well, they are going to establish a $500 million fund to construct data centers in the country. And they're going to be using the expertise and the work of Bitdeer to help do this. Now, these mining centers, I wonder if this is going to make the WEF happy. Because remember, they were talking about mining centers is a great place to use stranded energy like methane to decrease the carbon footprint. But they're saying that, according to Bhutan, quote, accelerate the kingdom's digital transformation and economic diversification by exploring the emerging sectors, end quote. So I like the fact they're using accelerate, number one, but they understand that this is the path forward. And they're going, I don't want to say they're going balls deep, but they're getting close to that. And
balls deep.
Good for them. They have excess energy, excess green energy at times. Sometimes they're an energy deficit, sometimes they're energy surplus. And energy deficit, they turn off their Bitcoin mining operations. Energy surplus, keep it going. So I like this. This might be a template for other countries to copy, just like we talked about in the past. So thoughts, Joey?
That's the biggest thing. It's a template. I want to see other countries look at this and see what they can do. Bhutan, like, as a nation, okay, I look at the natural resources available to a place like Bhutan, and then I look at the natural resources available to a place like Canada, right? Domestically, we are a powerhouse when it comes to resources, energy specifically. United States, same thing. A lot of European countries, same opportunities. African countries, same opportunities. Why did we let a small, as C-Funk in the chat is saying, like half dictatorial nation beat us to the punch when it comes to mining and how to do mining right and how to start manufacturing a model for state mining operations? How do we let that happen? I'll tell you how we let it happen. We spend all of our time worried about the wrong things in the first world. Most of the time we're voting on things like, you know, famously, what is that term? If there was ever a flood, we would all die. We would all drown because we would be just arguing about what to name the bridge, right? And, you know, this is the kind of thing that democracy fails on. There are people in Bitcoin who feel strongly that democracy has failed. Actually, Francis is among them. I had that in my list of questions for him when he came on, but we never made it there. And, you know, I don't know if it's failed, but I will say that there's a lot of stuff that requires vision and a firm hand. That's a very, very kind way to put it. But without vision and a firm hand, you're not going to get things done. And if you don't get things done, then you wind up just voting and rehashing the same problems every election cycle. People are worried about their term length, as you know, we've talked about before. A place like Bhutan doesn't have to worry about that. So is it in the Goldilocks zone, as we like to say, Len? I don't know. It's a monarchy, I understand. C-Funk in the chat is saying it's a monarchy, so it's a kingdom.
Yeah, it's
of
a constitutional
Bhutan
monarchy.
I think. Yeah, so I don't know. Let's see. If there's one thing I've learned over the last 2 years, it's that a lot of these countries get a bad rap and I don't know anything about them. And so I just would be better off waiting and watching. And if people had done that with El Salvador, I think about how much embarrassment would have been saved, right? I think a lot of people, myself included, jumped the gun on them and that turned out okay, or at least it's turned out okay for the moment. So let's see. I want to see another country adopt it with the same, I don't know, structure or similar structure or whatever before I, you know, celebrate, because the thing about these countries that are able to enact these programs, they're, you know, I hate to say it, but they're almost irrelevant, right? And right up until they're not. But for the moment, a place like Bhutan, like, no one really cares. No one at the White House is talking about this.
But Joey, we may never know, because if some country is doing Bitcoin mining
under the radar,
and the hash rate went up,
yeah,
somebody's hashing out Bitcoin and they don't want to disclose that information because the country is secretive in nature, we'll never know until they decide to spend it. Then it's,
you don't,
like,
know
where
until
did you get
you
it
know
from?
Right, this is the whole thing in Bitcoin. So I don't know, like Russia, obviously a good candidate. There are others. I don't know, man. It doesn't make for good content when we don't have spicy takes on stuff. But the fact of the matter is, if I pretended to know or you pretended to know what was next, we'd be lying. We'd just be making shit up. And I think that these are unprecedented things. This is all new territory. A country mining Bitcoin, a country accepting Bitcoin, a country, you know, adopting it as currency. It's all brand new territory. And we're just here for the ride.
Yeah. You know, another one that's talking shit, let's move on to Clown World. It's the state of New York, because they passed a law to ban fossil fuel burning in most new buildings. And this includes gas stoves, furnaces, and propane heatings. And they want to have this replaced with stuff that's a little bit more environmentally friendly, like heat pumps and induction stoves. And it's not going to take place or take an effect immediately. This legislation, there's a bit of a delay. 2026 for the majority of new buildings under 7 stories in height, and with an implementation date of 2029 for larger structures. So they're going to be relying more so on electricity. And with the fact we have cars being electrified, there's going to be a lot more stress on the electrical grid. So the next blackout they have, it could, depending on how cold it is, it could be disastrous. It could cost a lot of people their lives. And if you think, or they think, that this is going to make a huge difference in the end, look at this. This is very interesting, Joy. They want to ban all this shit because burning all this natural gas is bad. Natural gas accounts for 46% of the state's electrical generation. So they're changing. Instead of burning it at home for your furnace, now you're going to have it burned elsewhere to be transported over long distances. And there's going to be energy loss through that whole process. And then you could heat up your house with that energy. It does not make fucking sense to me. But this is what they're doing over there in a very cold part of the country, too. So hopefully it works out for the citizens of New York, because it could be disastrous if there's a blackout or worse.
The New York thing is crazy. Eric Adams, reminder, Bitcoin guy during the campaign, okay? Take your burn. You touch the stove if you supported that guy, because he was a Bitcoin guy during the campaign. He was a fraud. Okay. That guy's an idiot. This is an example of an idiot policy. Okay. This is all dumb stuff. I want to just point, though, to something that's related, if tangentially, but I still think it's important. As you start to force more electricity draw in appliances and utilities and tools and whatever that used to use gas, what you're doing is just increasing the load on the electrical grid. I want to share a story, and I hope you don't have it in your notes, but I want to share a story on what's going on in Quebec. This is not from Zero Hedge. This is not from Epoch Times. This is not from even our friend Mark at Bomb Thrower, okay? This is from CTV News Montreal. This is the headline. Quebecers should cut down on energy usage ahead of EV expansion, minister says. Now, I would put to you and to the listeners and viewers that New York is probably facing a similar problem. In fact, I think New York has bought energy from us and from Quebec in the past. So they need the energy. They need the electricity. Their grid cannot sustain at the 2018, 2017 levels on its own. It needed help from Canadian grids. So we were selling them excess energy. Okay.
At a loss.
At a loss. Of course, the only way we ever sell anything at a loss. So this is to me, if I look at this story about Quebec and I just kind of tie a nice bow here between this one and the New York story, how is New York planning on adding the electrical demand onto its grid with all these new builds, not being able to use anything but electric for every tool that used to use gas? Every heating outfit that used to use gas, everything that used to use gas. Then they're going to add every car that used to use gas to the electric grid. What is their plan? I'll tell you what the plan is. Either you buy from a reliable base load provider, which is going to be gas or nuclear, is going to be oil or nuclear, or you wind up telling people they have to live a shittier quality of life. And I don't see how you can tell a bunch of people in New York, where it is the most expensive place in the world to live, where every apartment costs $3,000, where every beer costs $25 US when you head out to the bar to meet your hinge date, who is a, you know, screaming liberal. What is the plan to tell those people they got to live a lower standard of life? Len, do you have any ideas for the New York politicians? How can they sell this to their people, sir? Do you have any ideas?
No, I have no way to make them sell this to their constituents, because it's going to be more pain and more suffering just because of policy. You had it all, and you decided to implement policy to make it worse in the future.
Never forget, people will look back and look for, like, what was peak New York City? And I'll tell you what peak New York City was. It was Home Alone 2. That was peak New York City. Mr. Duncan's toy chest, the pigeon lady who wears a burlap sack all the time, Donald Trump in the lobby, the sticky bandits. That was peak New York City, okay? Now, I don't know. Just consider, okay? This is a meme out there. If you want to talk about, like, how far the American lifestyle has fallen, what was Kevin McAllister's dad's employment that he was able to own a house like that? Have you seen that house? That house has been, his whole family live in there.
Yeah, that house has been viewed in many different films. I think Ferris Bueller also had the same house as well. So it's a famous house that they use for many things. So
I don't know.
And whatever it is, he's got to be an executive or something.
I don't know. I don't know.
Purchased Bitcoin in very, very early days.
Boomer in the chat saying peak NYC was Knicks Heat rivalry. I think those Hardaway, Morning, Vashawn Leonard Heat teams are pretty good, Boomer. But I still think it's Home Alone too, buddy. I don't know. We may disagree on that. Anyway, Len, let's keep going.
Well, Yankees and Mets, when they met in the World Series in the late 90s, I think, because that was a
Subway Series.
And then shortly thereafter, they had 9/11, and then it went from there. Oh, anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about, remember GameStop back in January 2021, and Robinhood prevented a lot of users from cashing out. You could buy in, but you can't sell. They're at it again. And this, again, it totally pisses me off when I see stories like this. It angers me because it shows you the deck is stacked against you, and it's always in favor of the house. And the house is the big money, the people that are able to buy their way into power or into prominent positions. So Robinhood, they were not letting people get out of their FRC puts. FRC took an absolute beating. And one Reddit user actually was saying he had a $295,000 that was riding on it, and it expired worthless because they weren't letting them cash out. What a fucking joke. So when I see shit like this, and it's a very brief story, it just reminds me why I'm in Bitcoin. Is you don't get this shit in Bitcoin. You buy it, put it in cold storage, you're good to go. You don't have to deal with all this garbage. But with this, you got to deal with another layer. And if they don't like you, or if they want to impose some sort of restrictions, well, too bad, so sad. You're going to be shit out of luck. And this guy lost almost 300 grand in a process. Too bad.
If we're talking banks here, did you see this Hugh Hendry guy making the rounds? This guy is apparently famous. Boomer sent me a couple of good podcast appearances he has. He runs a podcast called Acid Capitalist. Good stuff. Yeah. Like, I listened to a few episodes. He was making the case last week, and I haven't heard this before, that if the government, I should say, doesn't do a 2008 version of the short selling ban on regionals, what they will do is they'll lock deposits into regional banks. And I had never heard that before. It's like the you know, ugly redheaded stepbrother of the bail-in concept that we've heard so much about. This idea that they're locking your deposits in so that you can't flee to a big four in the States or a big five bank in the States. Very strange. And, you know, I just think, like, in terms of the short selling, what options does the government have at this point? Like, everyone can see that if the rates go up, the regionals suffer. PacWest, First Republic, you know, all the way back to Silicon Valley and these other guys.
Silvergate.
Right? Silvergate. The duration mismatch has been fatal to some of these banks, right? The FDIC comes in and buys them, or JP Morgan comes in and buys them. And I just think, like, what is the plan? Oh, and today as well, I don't know if you saw that the Treasury announced that they would inject liquidity as needed to protect the deposit. That's insuring deposits. Like, it's amazing.
Unlimited.
Yeah, wordplay these guys have. Like, I'll tell you.
But they'll do this.
Jerome Powell would kill me in Wordle. That guy knows every word to make it seem soft or hard. It doesn't matter, okay? He's got the language. Him and his team of poets have this language thing down to fool normies, to fool the sleepwalkers, right? And, you know, I'll just say this too before, and then I'll pass it to you, okay? Tinfoil hat here for a sec. Where is money getting its value for the average person now? The average person, I think it's safe to say this, okay? the average person knows that inflation is really high and that the dollars in their pocket don't hold any value. They might not be able to buy stocks or a house because they need the money day to day. So is the money only drawing value because it's transactional? It's the value transfer mechanism they use. I don't know what the average person would otherwise be looking at in terms of keeping money or the value that money has. And so is it a coincidence, Len, that all this ordinals, inscriptions, network clogging is making transactional Bitcoin on the main chain basically impossible to use at the same time? I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. I think about all this stuff and I look at some of these pictures that are clogging the network, and I grant you that a lot of the inscriptions are text-based at this point. I think the vast majority, but is it coincidental? I don't know. I just don't know. And but it's not just a lot of things I'm starting to not know for sure.
It's BRC20. That's
is that it's all that stuff. But under the same umbrella. Is it coincidental? Is it coincidental?
I don't know.
Because it seems like more people now are starting to realize, like, holy shit, the money is garbage. It's garbage, man. And the banks have to make these announcements. And the regionals, the thing that I think is under discussed too is that the regionals have to tell their client base, mom and pop, John and Jane, your money is safe here because they're going to insure it. They just print it forever and that's it. And I think most people have enough know-how to realize what that means, even if it's just like a rudimentary understanding. And so they only keep cash because it's transactional. What if there was something else that held value and was transactional too? And suddenly the story on Bitcoin is that the network is clogged or it's too expensive to do a transaction.
But that idea that it's always going to be like a melting iceberg and you don't want to hold on to it. You want to buy something that's going to ultimately hold value in the long run.
Yeah.
Look at the stock market, and it's not like in the NASDAQ, TSX, New York Stock Exchange, you name it, all that stuff. You're talking trillions and trillions of dollars. And this is not just trillions that just happened overnight. It's been like that for a long time. So that money that people didn't have in their pocketbooks or in their bank account, they put it on the stock market. That's where they parked it, as a perception that stock market will go up over time. And it, for the most part, that's correct. Not just that, real estate too. So this has been it's a longstanding notion that it just keeping it in cash does not make sense. You're not going to make a – even banks don't keep it in cash. They fucking get the money. They send it out as soon as they get it. That's why they have liquidity issues. Fuck, nobody holds on to it.
Did you see that the Federal Reserve, one of the regional Fed outfits, posted a couple of charts today? I think – it was either Lynn Alden or TXMC that posted them, but the comment on the website was that the bank thinks that most of the support for U.S. consumers will come from built-up savings over from the fiscal injections over the last 2 or 3 years, and it should last until the last quarter of 2023. Is that nuts or what? That is nuts.
Wait.
And don't forget.
But we have the ceiling too, the debt ceiling, talking about that. They are talking total shit right now.
These guys are nuts. And don't forget, everyone always forgets, we talked about this. They changed the definition of savings so that your checking account became savings under the same umbrella during COVID. They never changed it back. And so like, man, I don't know, man. Things are looking a little shakier than usual out there, I would say.
Well, let's talk about one of the banks that is, in my opinion, shaky. It's TD Bank. So
yeah,
could be really the Canadian bank that could first experience some sort of problems. And I'll explain why. I could be wrong, but this is from what I gather. We talked about it in the past that it's the most shorted bank in the world. At the time this report came out, it was the short positions were $3.7 billion. In fact, just 2 weeks after that report came out, it increased to $6.1 billion. So a lot more people decided to short it. Now, granted, in the grand scheme of things, it's not as shorted as other companies like MSTR, for instance. So it's a big disparity between the two. But still, there are people out there that notice this, and they are shorting TD Bank more so than any other bank out there. TD Bank also owns a 12% stake in Charles Schwab. Take a look at their stock the past 6 months, and it's down to the right. So they lost a lot of money. 12% is a hefty stake in that.
Yeah,
we have this whole banking crisis, and we talked about all these banks, the three of them, the community banks that suffered capital loss, and unfortunately, they capitulated. TD Bank is, if you look at their assets that they hold, it's not that much higher than the other ones that have fallen. So they are within percentage wise, relatively close. They are still a community, so a regional bank. So there could be some capital flight that could impact them. In fact, if you look at TD Bank versus the other banks in Canada, the other big banks, TD Bank had the most capital leaving their bank in the United States versus the other ones. It was actually more money left TD Bank than any, like percentage wise, than the average US bank out there. So more people are taking their money out of TD Bank versus other banks in the United States. So there could be some capital flight here that could impact them. The fact that they have exposure, large exposure to the United States, 12% ownership in Charles Schwab, this could be ripe for the picking for a bank, a Canadian bank that may suffer some liquidity issues. I'm not saying it will happen, but this is one, in my personal opinion, it's top of the list of all the Canadian banks that could suffer major losses. So who knows what will happen? The Bank of Canada may be there to help it inject some liquidity to keep them afloat. I'm sure they would. And if they do, we all suffer in the end.
How about this? I asked ChatGPT this week, because my wife's company has a paid license, what the Canadian pension plan exposure to commercial real estate was. I think in 2021, it was about 13 or 14%. What do you think their exposure is to the banking sector? I bet you it's pretty high.
Yeah, it's a safe, perceived to be safe investment.
So could they like take a huge, like, you know, it would be more than a flesh wound if CRE continued to nosedive because people are not going to work. And then one of the banks looks shaky too. Like, you're talking about maybe what, a 20%, 25%, you know,
a perfect storm situation.
Crazy. Really. But the thing is, one of those things, like if one bank goes, then the dominoes will come.
Oh, exactly.
The exposure it'll be crazy, right? The Venn diagram going through all their different exposure silos. There won't be anything left untouched, right? Everything will get shaken. The foundation will be wrecked. It's funny, at the meetup, I talked to at least two people who are telling me that they're wondering how my house hunting is going. So thank you for that. But I'll just say that as soon as I'm done buying a house, maybe this house that I'm looking at now, I got to think that I'm going to be barely using my TFSA, honestly, and my RSP. Because the only reason I use those accounts is because I need them for a new home, right? You need that money to be basically tax efficient, and Bitcoin is not at the moment. So what do you, you know, like, what do you, what do you need it for? It's so risky because even if you do all the right things, it just takes one suit who got greedy at a board meeting, you know, over two quarters to fuck the whole thing up for you and for everyone else. Like, it sucks. And then as we always talk about, what do your investment managers say? It's market conditions. Are the market conditions in the room with us now, sir? Tell me about the market conditions. Are they here with us? Okay.
They're omnipresent.
Unbelievable, man. Father, son, and the market conditions. Anyway, go ahead.
Let's move on to Clown World North. And the Bank of Canada today, there's a survey that they're asking you to do to talk about CBDC. So if
they
you
just shoot it out on Twitter, like, no one's going to say anything. It's just a casual, hey, we're looking for your input on ruining the privacy of you and your family forever and ever.
So if you want to give feedback about a CBDC and the Bank of Canada is running the survey, your opportunity is there. You could do it. I'm not sure what they're going to take from all this. I mean, there may be a lot of negativity from this and they just go in one ear and out the other, but you know, it is a democracy here. We should have our say. So if you want to, you know, voice your opinion, you could do so. And if you want to even fudge the numbers, and as somebody said, for a different thing, you could use ChatGPT and just do a whole bunch of surveys that talk about how it's this or that. I don't want to see what it could be.
Write me 10 survey responses about why CBDCs are a bad idea. Please don't use any commonly accepted swear words.
I'm going to leave that. I'm not going to go any further. So let's move on.
ChatGPT available in the after show. We'll be talking about it.
No, I can't even talk in the after show. This is
awful. Okay, I don't want to move on yet. Are we still talking about the survey? I want to talk about the survey. Yeah. This is at 28% through the survey. This is what the screen reads, okay? Canada's currency is the header. The Bank of Canada is the only authority that can issue banknotes in Canada. A digital Canadian dollar would be the same. It would be issued and backed by the central bank. I don't know what that means. Not really sure. Okay. I don't think TIFF is showing up at my door if I don't like the currency. However, it is possible that in the future, private digital currencies, in brackets, e.g. Bitcoin, or CBDCs issued by foreign countries could be widely used in Canada. This could compromise the central role of the Canadian dollar in our economy. That's the fucking point, you guys. That's the point.
No, no, no. I have a something that is a beef I have to talk about this.
Tell me.
They, not just the Bank of Canada, even the Federal Reserve. I've been watching a lot of Project Hamilton and everything that goes along with their rollout. They're in the R&D stage of a CBDC over there. They frame their CBDC from a central bank, both Canada, Bank of Canada, and the Federal Reserve, as a public money. It's not a public money. It's a private money because it is one institution that is issuing it. A public money is Bitcoin because it is everybody's doing it. Anybody could hop in a system and participate in it. That is a public money.
Can I
and
just mention here as well that the bank is like they use Schrodinger's public and private definitions, right? They're public when it's convenient and they're private when it's convenient. They're part of the government when it's convenient. They're arm's length when it's convenient. It's very tricky to keep track of that. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to just fight on this hill that it is definitely what they are going to issue in a CBDC. It is not private, sorry, not public money. It's private money. It's as private as Circle or Tether or anything else. They're the exact same thing because it's issued by one central entity. So that's all I just have to say about that.
I agree with you. I agree with you, Len. Public ledgers are called public ledgers for a reason because they are public money. And that's what public money looks like. This other stuff is a perverted way to destroy privacy and destroy rights of, you know, sovereign citizens. It's not right.
I got a few more Canadian stories. I don't want to leave any of them. They're all good. Food bank issues. There was a tweet that was sent out within the last week, and it was showing off the line that was outside the Fort York Food Bank in Toronto. And the line was excessively long, and even Poliev was commenting on it. And their executive director, Julie Lejeune, she was interviewed by Global News, and in an interview she was saying, get these numbers, Joey, this is nuts. Currently we're serving over 3,200 people a week. Last month it was 3,000. So last month 3,000, now it's 3,200. And a month before was 2,500. That's a big jump in just 1 month. But not just them, the Daily Bread Food Bank, they estimate they currently spend now between $1.5 million to $1.58 million a month alone just on food. That amount used to be their yearly spend. Their yearly spend before is now
How far back?
Before 2020.
That's not that long. So
that is not. So their yearly spend is now just 1 month. They say this is partially due to increased food costs, but also due to increased demand. They say prior to 2020, they used to see clients in the range of 60,000 to 65,000 per month. So before 2020, that's how many they received in a month. Just last month, they got 270,000 clients. That's a big chunk. So it's not going to get any better. People they're feeling the pinch every which way. It's harder to stretch the dollar because everything is costing so much more: food, insurance, rent, mortgage, everything. And they're even skipping meals, and they're even skipping meals to make sure that their pets are fed. We talked about this in the past. It's a scary situation, and this is not indicative of a booming economy and a western civilization that has so much wealth. This is the opposite, and this is sad.
It's not right. How long until one of those food banks start adopting the motto, be your own food bank, and sending people home?
Yeah.
Too soon? Too soon? Not good? Okay. In all seriousness, think about as the population continues to grow, how much more strain will be put on those food banks. As the cost of living in terms of mortgage payments goes up, the expanding swath of, you know, ways and means that you're going to see in line. You know, you're going to see people in business casual in line at food banks because their mortgage is 8%. You know, what is the variable rate right now? It's 6 and change, I think. If it goes up again, which Bloomberg and other places are reporting, it might go up again in Canada.
TIFF is saying it.
I know. And so, like, you know, what is the likelihood that these people find themselves in dire straits, right? I don't know. It's a sad state of affairs, dude. And I also mentioned that, you know, what it's one thing for a food bank in a place like Toronto, right? Daily Bread and other kind of main, like, metropolitan food banks have less trouble getting donations than a food bank in Saskatchewan, right? But the problems there are the same. People can't afford to live there either. And the cost of living is going up there too. And employment is hard to find at a reasonable clip there as well. And all that stuff, right? Difficult, difficult, difficult. Very bad.
Well, let's talk about numbers. I'll just transition to this topic. Immigrant numbers. And this is being reported by Better Dwelling. I want to thank them for providing this information. Permanent resident admissions in 2023, Joey. Number go up. Remember how many people were admitted in 2022? Well, admissions for permanent residents hit 49,500 people in February. That's 33% higher than last year.
Great.
Last year, February. And January also had an uptick of 44%. 50,900 people were admitted permanent residents in Canada. And in the first 2 months in Canada, so that's 100,000, just a little bit under, a little bit over 100,000 permanent residents arrived in 2 months in 2023. And if you look at Q1, 113,000 of last year. So Q1 2022, 113,000. We're going to crush that easily. So we let in over a million people, or about a million people last year. Now, granted, it was not just all permit residents, they were all study permit, work permit, and so forth. But
yeah,
there's going to be an uptick in immigrants that's going to be entering Canada this year. It's going to be adding to the stress that's already existing on food banks,
everything. Some are the stress on everything, housing, everything,
housing
everywhere.
Housing costs more. Yeah, healthcare, schools, everything. Because you're just another million people in a country that has 39 million people or so. So it's a huge jump, and that's 2 million people that are going to be coming in. Plus, 2 million people are going to be coming in the last 2 years. That's a lot of people.
I wish those people luck finding the quality of life that they were promised when they left their home countries to come here. Ritesh Jain, friend of the show, who we should get back on at some point, maybe in the fall when things slow down a little bit. You know, famously, if you follow him on Twitter, he does a lot of spaces and presentations for Indian immigrants, potential immigrants, on what life in Canada is actually like. And I guarantee you, he doesn't think it's better than they do. He's giving them a wake-up call and trying to discourage them from coming here on false premises. And, you know, Len, the more we do this, the more difficult it is for the housing bubble to finally pop and for housing to become more affordable. Ben Rabideau, is it Ben Rabideau or Ron Butler? I forget. But one of them tweeted out something from the Canada housing subreddit. A kid who's like 25 years old, 130K in savings, about 24,000 in student debt, can't buy a house in Toronto. Can't get approved for a mortgage, can't make a down payment. Everything is too expensive. And it doesn't want to move further away because he works in Toronto, right? So there's an example of a kid who's done everything he was told by the system that has failed him, by the education system that has failed him, by the currency system that has failed him. And soon he will leave with all his brain power and all his income potential, and he will start a family somewhere else. And Canada will pay the price for that at some point. We may be able to kick the can down the road, Len. You and me may be old and gray by the time that happens. But after long enough time, if just the people who need handouts stay, this place is not going to be a good place to live. And I fear that we're seeing the beginnings of that now.
Now, let's talk about car payments in Canada. This is another line on our expenses tab. JD Power was reporting for new cars, it's an uptick of 17% year over year, the cost for new cars. The average lease payment is also up 24%. So lease payments are now showing, get this, Joey, $840 a month. And new car payments are just a hair less than $900 a month. That's an incredible, and I'm not talking about fuel, I'm not talking about maintenance, I'm not talking about insurance, because this all has to be tacked on to that as well. Man, those people now that have to have new cars or want to get new cars, so fucking expensive. Yep. Something's going to have to give. There's going to be more people probably going to be relying on food banks as a result.
Yeah, they won't be able to drive there after a couple of months of paying those car payments, that's for sure. There's a great video online of a young woman, maybe from the States, maybe from here, I'm not sure. She's definitely American or Canadian, though. And she's talking about how she took a car loan from the bank for her new car and was looking at the total on the loan, about $17,000. and she's paying $400, sounds like, every 2 weeks, so about $800 a month. And she's crying in the video because she can't figure out why the loan total is only going down by about $100 each time she pays, even though she's paying $400. Well, you know, why do you think? It's interest, right? Same way your mortgage, if you're on one of these extend and pretend plans, same way your mortgage, if you're, you know, getting hit by variable rates, you know, your principal is going down every month by a dollar or whatever, right? Some of these guys actually do negative mortgages, anticipating rate declines at some point. You're paying into something, you're not getting anything back, is the common theme. And I will just note, Len, that I think, if memory serves, all the interest payments on those car loans, it's GDP. So you think Ooh. About yeah, yeah, so think
tack it on.
So think about how that looks, right? Like truly, truly insane accounting practices at every level when it comes to measuring GDP. I heard a podcast a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to talk about on the show and I forgot, but I'm reminded now. GDP is like an insane measuring stick, right? Like how do you measure someone's economic output? Like is this podcast, this podcast doesn't count toward GDP, but I like to think that I learn stuff when you and I talk. I hope that people who listen learn stuff when you and I talk, and maybe that leads to more economic output somewhere, but it doesn't get measured.
Then well, I think we're negative, like, GDP. The
yeah,
reason
sure,
why? Because
yeah.
we're pumping it into Bitcoin.
Right? Yeah, right. Instead of, exactly.
Instead of buying goods and services.
I'm pulling it out. Right? Yeah. When the GDP is low enough, they got to start adding Bitcoin buys to it. That's how we'll know we're winning. But then I look at like other podcasts or other TV shows or YouTube channels, like Sessions, right? Sessions has a huge audience.
Yeah.
It doesn't get measured in the GDP. And so how much output is he helping in the country, right? Instead, it's just spending. Everything is spending, spending, spending. It's double counted, triple counted. You know, the car gets sold, it counts. The interest gets paid, it counts. The taxes get paid, it counts. You get your tax return from the government, spend that, it counts. Like everything counts a million times. What is the actual number of dollars and the actual value of those dollars in terms of what they got for you at the end of the year? It's not even close to the number that's being touted as GDP. It can't be. It doesn't make any sense for it to be that high. If things are getting counted 3, 4, 5, 6 times. There's another TikTok video or YouTube video I see on Twitter of a young woman in the States who's got to be like 20 or something, talking about how if she has $100 and spends it, all the different ways it gets taxed. And by the end, her brain is in a pretzel trying to think about all this stuff. And it's like it's funny to talk about it, but this is, you know, a different story. People in the chat, okay, yeah, we pay, our revenue counts as GDP, but I'm saying, are we giving you more than just what we're making in revenue from the ads? I fucking hope so, okay? I like the ad money, but I like to think that we're providing more than just the fucking ad money to the economy. You know, I hope you guys take some from this. And you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Is there an intangible value that's not being counted? Instead, we just count all the different ways that money is financially engineered to add value to the economy. It doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. Sorry for yelling at you guys in the chat. I'm reading.
Well, let's talk about
these guys don't understand what I'm talking about.
Let's talk about added value and anybody that
you got a story for added value after that.
I think so. Well, plastic straws, man. Remember plastic straws back in the day? Yeah. We used to go out and use those, and they replaced them now with the paper straws. At least here in Ontario, I don't know if the rest of Canada or the rest of the world has adopted this, but man, the paper straws, they turn into mush, fucking mush, right away as soon as you put them in your drink.
Yeah.
And this was all with the idea to save the environment. Plastic, you know, it's single use. It gets thrown away and added to the oceans and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Paper straws aren't what they're cracked up to be. Apparently, some environmental groups have been saying that deforestation is now the problem with this. So we traded plastic pollution for deforestation and forest degradation. And that is not the answer. And they're seeing a surge in global bans on banning single-use plastics, including here in Canada. And it's estimated that 3 billion, with a B, trees are chopped down to make stuff like bags, paper bags, straws, and food containers. So you essentially traded one problem for another. And another thing to consider, too, those trees that we all cut down to make these paper straws and all this stuff, well, they suck in carbon from the atmosphere and they create oxygen for us. So that's another thing to consider. It's just, obviously, it's not helping with the 1.5 Celsius narrative they're trying to push out there. But and there's even one more thing on top of this, Joey. They're saying it takes a lot of water, too. They're saying it takes 13 liters of water. It's It's a resource that's very scarce in some parts of the world to make a standard piece of paper. And that's used to make the paper straws and all this shit. So here we go. Unintended consequences. We changed the way we do things when we go out. No more plastic straws. We went with the great paper straws. Oh, fuck. They're not so good for the environment after all. What a fucking joke.
What are we going to call the campaign? We got stop the presses, right? We got change the code. What are we going to call this one?
If anybody has an idea, let me know. Fuck it.
Suck what you want. Suck what you want. Look, we're coining that here on the CBP. Unless you got a better idea, people in the chat. Well, Go ahead.
With those paper straws or plastic straws, you go to Vancouver, because this is clown world in a nutshell. So buddy in Vancouver decided to open up a shop in, obviously, Vancouver, what I mentioned. Not just any shop.
Is this the drug guy? Shop.
Yeah, man. Beautiful story. He has this nice printed sign, a yellow background. It looks professionally done. He's selling cocaine, crack cocaine, heroin, MDMA, methamphetamine, so, and giving price points and everything. 100% fentanyl free, tested supply. Thank you for testing. A great stuff. The beauty is it's no impurity or cuts. You have to be 18 plus, ID required. I believe you have to be 19 to drink in a lot of provinces. Yeah. I could be wrong. Either way, you only 19 to drink, but 18 to take these hard drugs. And buddy's out there selling away. Good for him. This is clown world personified. And if he ends up getting arrested, he says he's going to make a constitutional challenge against this, and it's his constitutional right to sell this to people. So Vancouver truly turning into a shithole.
I don't have a lot to say about this, except that I will note that that guy is selling for cheaper than festival prices. So that's good. There's money to be made if he's in the right crowd, for sure.
He says the price is competitive with the
it's competitive.
That's what it said on the article. Anyways, that's it for the stories. I do have a Bitcoiner, but no coiner of the week. I'm not sure if you have any of them.
I have a Bitcoiner of the week. I'll go first. People want to listen to you. I'll go first. So I'm going to read you a quote here. I'm going to read you a quote here, and it's from my Bitcoiner of the week. It's a melancholy Bitcoiner of the week. I got to find the quote, make sure I can read the whole thing. It's from a newspaper clipping, so this is going to be hard to read. Okay, this person, this is from an Economic and Fiscal Outlook in 1982. This person, the Bitcoiner of the week, concluded his review of the paper by indicating that the business and financial community had, on the whole, accepted the extraordinary deficit increase to the extent that it resulted from the operation of automatic stabilizers in response to the recession. It remained essential, however, for the government to reinforce its commitment to retain control of the fiscal situation, or in effect, to keeping its finger in the dike through a vigorous effort to finance any new initiatives through cuts. This is the last, it seems to me, reasonable finance minister that we had. I don't know if Paul Martin was reasonable. I don't know if our current one is reasonable, but this is a secret cabinet document that was released. And I found this on BlackLocks, an unlocked BlackLocks article, very rare.
He had his finger in a dike. That alone should make him a Bitcoiner of the week, right?
The Bitcoiner of the week, a melancholy happy trails, as Wilbon and Kornheiser say on PTI, to Mr. Mark Lalonde, the fiscal, what was his name? He's a cabinet minister, finance minister.
Under Mulroney's government.
And Pierre-Elliott Trudeau. He's Pierre-Elliott Trudeau's.
Oh, sorry. No, it was Trudeau's government. My bad.
Finance minister as well. So a guy who, if you read the BlackLocks article, you can go to blacklocks.ca and read it. It's unlocked. A picture of what fiscal restraint looked like, maybe the last one that we saw. And, you know, if this continues, then maybe the last one we'll ever see. So all the best to that guy as he crosses the Rainbow Bridge. And my Bitcoin of the week, Mark Lalonde.
Well, Paul Martin, he downloaded a lot of expenses to the provinces, but it was a different time too. The Soviet Union fell. It opened up a lot of economies overseas. So it was just the environment was totally different, but they were able to pay off some of the debt, and people look at that and he did say that he did a good job. So, but I don't want to say good or bad, but a lot of people like that. And that's, we'll leave it at that.
Good.
My Bitcoiner of the week is, it's an unknown gentleman. I have no idea who he is. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not even sure if he is a Bitcoiner. It's just his actions leads me to believe he might be. This past weekend, there was a new king crowned in the UK. And this whole thing, it's a lot of money was spent for this whole thing. I can't fathom how much money was spent and how many people flew in and carbon usage and blah, blah, blah. The morning of when he was going to get crowned king, they noticed that the grounds, there was a giant penis that was mowed in the nuts this guy had were as big as the nuts that he mowed in that lawn over there. I have no fucking clue if he owns Bitcoin, but the fact he's doing this leads me to believe he sees that there's garbage going on. Britain is not doing very well. There's unemployment is high. Their windfall tax on energy producers, they're going to be going through with a CBDC relatively soon. And then they go through this and all this money spent. And it's almost like, you know, let them eat cake moment. I don't know. I like this. It's pretty funny stuff, man. This guy doing the giant penis. He's my Bitcoiner of the week, whoever you are.
God bless you, penis mower. I saw that clip too. Did you see King Charles now, I guess? That's what we call him. Is it Charles?
Yeah, King Charles. Yeah.
King Charles with Chuck. The scepters. He's got two scepters in his hand and a giant crown. Like, these people are playing dress up. I'm friends with a guy who was in the UK military up until he moved here several months ago. And him and his wife's my girlfriend's best friend, or my wife's best friend. And they were saying that there's something called a stone of something that is like a 1,000-year-old stone. They move around the UK and Ireland and whatever to commemorate the royal family. And they like put the stone somewhere new, I guess. Isn't every stone sort of by default at least 1,000 years old? Like, what are we talking about here?
Millennial.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? This is crazy, man. I don't understand this at all. Who are the people that care about this, by the way? And also, has there ever been a worse hairline family to like than that one? Like Harry and the other guy, who's the other prince? One of them married Meghan Merkel or whatever. Andrew? And the other guy, no, not Andrew, although he's got a bad hairline too. No, the two kids. One of them married Meghan Merkel. The other one married someone in the chat will tell me. I forget. No, not Philip. Philip died. These kids are like super young. Princess Diana's kids.
I don't follow this. I'm writing off names I heard in the past.
I don't remember now. Anyway, someone will tell me. These kids they just go bald in the worst way. Whatever. I'm counting my blessings here, knocking on wood. But damn, man. William and Harry, Moose. Thank you. Got it. So there we go. Yeah.
Matt Damon.
Jeez. Great chat tonight, by the way. Everybody's fucking rammed.
My father, he didn't get his Canadian citizenship till very late in life. Because he didn't want to swear allegiance to the queen. So because of that, he got, I think it was like 87, 88, he got his citizenship. So he was here for like 20 years and he didn't get his citizenship because that was the only reason he didn't want to get it. He finally capitulated. So that was
amazing.
But that's it, man.
That's it for today. Come to the after show if you're on the audio side. Len told me we were going to go long. I told him to keep it under an hour and a half. We were close. So we'll stick around 10 or 12 minutes here and talk to you guys about whatever. And, this week, I'm talking to Simone Bélanger, mercredi soir, about...
From the Canadian Investor Podcast, for those who are unaware.
Yeah, man, that's a show that we both listened to when we were modeling this show out. And we've gotten quite a ways away from that original model, but I still listen to that show when I have some time. And I like Simone and Braden, obviously, who came to support us and ShakePay at that event in the summer. So, yeah, man, all that to say, good to see everyone. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Yeah, take care and PV.